Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Mistake to try to come in and take any one of us. We will not let you. You will die. You will have to take anybody over all of our dead bodies.
An eerie voice from the past, Jim Jones, speaking in the Jonestown compound, where eventually over 900 people lost their lives either by suicide or by murder, along with their leader, now recognized as a cult leader, kind of the typical cult leader, Jim Jones. 30 years ago on this day, Rich Abanis joins us for the next half hour of Issues Etc. He's a cult expert. We're going to be talking about the Jonestown massacre and what led up to it. How did it happen that almost 1,000 people moved out of the United States with this preacher to set up a utopia and then end their lives suddenly all in one day? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, and our in-studio email address this Tuesday afternoon, November the 18th, talkback@issuesetc.org. Rich Abanis is author of numerous books, including Defending the Faith and Cults, New Religious Movements, and Your Family. Rich, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, how you doing?
Doing well. What draws people to cult leaders like Jim Jones? In retrospect, you say, who could follow such a man?
Well, you know, that depends on so many factors. When a cult is forming, who the cult leader is, the types of people who are getting drawn to him, and what his message is. I mean, you know, back when Jim Jones was starting out, I mean, let's think about this. You know, that was in coming out of the late 60s into the early 70s. People were really disillusioned with government, with capitalism. And really, Jim Jones was preaching socialism and communism. I mean, that's what he was into. And many of the people who joined his flock were looking for a better way of existing, a better life that could be had. And it sounded good. You know, everybody lives together, loves together, shares community property, shares each other's strengths and talents. And so, you know, he was really trying to start, and he even claimed that Jonestown was communism to its perfection, and that's what he was after. So that was part of it. But then, you know, more generally speaking, you're going to get always an individual who really talks a good line, who, when it comes to pseudo-Christian cults, who knows their Bible, can spout Bible verses, has a lot of charisma, and more often than not, it's filling some kind of emotional need. I've been talking to people for years now, cultists, non-cultists, people from aberrant churches, and most of the time, you know, people get involved with things for emotional reasons, not necessarily intellectual reasons.
Who did Jim Jones' followers, in the end, who did they believe him to be?
He was the Messiah. He was God incarnate to them. He was the one who was the father of all the children, not literally, but figuratively, spiritually. They in fact called him Dad and Father, replacing, of course, our Heavenly Father. And that's the kind of depth of control you see. We see the same thing in the Branch Davidians, where, you know, David Koresh took it even one step further and became the literal father of most of the children by taking other men's wives. And so this is sort of this pattern. You know, they like to call themselves a father, dad, to take the place of God for these people.
I keep coming back to this. I mean, and it is, I must admit, purely the hindsight perspective here. But it seems as though, And I hate to make it sound, I hate to make it sound flip, but anyone in their right mind would pick up and follow a man who wants to be called dad or daddy to a foreign country, a sweltering one at that, where if the man seems to be self-destructing himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you have to remember, it doesn't happen overnight. He didn't in his first meeting of followers at a church Bible study immediately proclaim himself the Messiah and dad and want everybody to follow everything he said. No, it happened very slowly over the course of years. And with Jim Jones, he was very, very active politically. I mean, he met with Governor Jerry Brown. He was appointed to political positions after helping politicians. He met with Walter Mondale and Rosalynn Carter. I mean, this guy was really functioning in some pretty high up circles that, you know, probably you or I would never even get in at this point. And yet he was there. And this was over a long process, building up the trust of his followers, building up even the trust of secular society to where, you know, you start getting to a point, you're going, well, people from the outside are saying, surely this can't be true. And then people from the inside have so much vested in it that it's hard to pull out.
How did they end up going to Guyana?
Well, as things started progressing and becoming a little worse and worse and worse, family members started getting concerned. It was a classic, you know, families breaking up, people wanting to go off with this man and give all their money and everything to him. Remember, it was socialism, communism, wanting to give over all their worldly goods and money and things. And so family members who were seeing this were starting to make complaints, calling the police, talking to the government officials, and Jones could feel the pressure coming in on him, and he could not set up the kind of socialist, communist group that he wanted with complete and total control over everyone. And so they leased some land out in Guyana, and he got it into his head also that the government was after him, the CIA was after him. Sort of everything started closing in on him, and he had to get away, and the paranoia, schizophrenic paranoia started kicking in. And so he got all his followers out there. He wanted to set up this commune. And then once you get isolated, I mean, it's show's over, game over. You know, once you get isolated and there's no checks and balances, there's no cops to call, there's no nothing, he just totally went off the deep end. Also, he started doing a lot of drugs, and that's when basically that became a communist prison camp, really, is what it became. People who tried to escape were drugged in what they called long-term therapy. So, again, we see that there were some people who were saying, you know, once they got in the situation, uh-oh, I really made a mistake, I got to get out of here. But this was 1978, 1979 in Guyana, and he had armed guards. And once they were there, it was almost too late. They couldn't get away. They couldn't escape. They were then held prisoner.
And what led to the mass suicide?
Well, what happened was because there was so much attention and the government was getting so many complaints, California Representative Leo Ryan decided to go down to Guyana at the request of lots of members and of police authorities and government officials and say, look, I'm just going to take a look and see what's going on down here. And he went down there with some cameramen, some news reporters, other individuals, family members who wanted to get their people out of there, and they went and they visited the place, and it, you know, it started going downhill immediately. There were confrontations between people who wanted to go back, people who didn't want to go back. Leo Ryan was trying to process people to get them back to the United States, take names so that they could then leave later on. You know, I mean, they didn't have a big 747 they could take everybody out on. All they had were a couple little Cessnas, and so he got there. Once he left, it just put Jones over the edge. He knew that things were just going to go in a direction he did not want them to go. And he basically said, the end has come. They know we're here. They're trying to destroy us. And he put out the order to all his men, and the suicides and murders began. And once they did begin, they sent what was known, I believe, as the Red Brigade, who were some of his strong men, with guns to the little airstrip there, primitive airstrip that Representative Ryan was going to be flying out on with the others. And they shot them. They murdered them right there. And he, in fact, Representative Ryan, was the only congressman to die in the line of duty to date. It was just, you know, it was just horrible. And I do believe there's even a video of that terrible, terrible event happening on the airstrip. You can sort of see it happening. It's truly heartbreaking.
When we come back, we're going to spend some more time with Richard Bonas, a cult expert, author of numerous books, including Defending the Faith, Cults, New Religious Movements in Your Family, and Prophets of the Apocalypse. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the Jonestown, Guyana massacre. It's Tuesday, November the 18th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. What do you remember about the Jonestown tragedy? Give us a call or email us during this break. Talkback@issuesetc.org, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. After 10 more minutes with Rich, Dr. Alveda King is going to join us. She's niece of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Director of African American Outreach for Gospel of Life Ministries. We're going to speak with her briefly about abortion and civil rights. Big question for her, of course, is if Dr. King were still alive and able to advise President-elect Barack Obama on the issue of civil rights and abortion, what would he have to say? We'll see what she has to say when we start hour two of Issues, etc. Then we continue part two of our three-part daily series with Pastor David Shaddy of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Indianapolis. He conducts seminars nationwide called The Gospel and the Christian Family. Part two today, Fathers, Mothers, and Children. That's coming up in about a half hour here on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again.
Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, with his thoughts on the return of Issues Etc.
It's great to be with you guys on Issues Etc. Welcome back. A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again. It's always great to be with you guys.
We're talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at www.issuesetc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Ann Schumacher, Mary Klaustemeyer, Roger Worley, Michael Heidel, Walter Winkler, Amy James, Brandon Williams, Pat Grassley, and Pastor Kevin Robeson. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Richard Bonas is our guest, a regular guest here on the program. rather tragic day remembering the 30th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre. Rich, so many of these things, I'm not on the scale of something like Jonestown, but not all of them, of course, but so many of these cults, especially those that are organized around these charismatic individuals, turn deadly. Why is it?
Well, you know, I think because it gets to a certain point. In some of the cases, for example, when I'm thinking about Jonestown, David Koresh, and the Branch Davidians, some of these cults start dipping into illegal activities. When you start getting illegal activities involved, you run the risk of violence because then people are starting to poke around, and you know, you that's far different than if you've got a church out there, maybe even sadly on television or some preacher, and they're right out there open. They may be saying some kooky things and some truly unbiblical things, but you know, they're not breaking any laws. And the police aren't going to get involved, and they're not isolated. They're still functioning within society. If you look at many of these cults that turn deadly, they're all very, very isolated. The Branch Davidians, the Order of the Solar Temple, Luke Jouret, that was the Suicides, Heaven's Gate cult. Although they were still sort of drifting around in society, they were very isolated. The People's Temple, I mean, whenever you get violence, you'll usually see illegal activity coupled with isolationism. Being isolated is one of the worst things that can happen for a group. So if you know anyone who's out there, if you're in a church or you're in a Bible study or you're under a teacher, and they say what we need to get spiritual is what we need to do is go off and be by ourselves somewhere, run. Don't walk away from that group.
What about the leaders themselves? I guess it's, in a sense, an effort in futility to wonder retrospectively whether or not the leaders themselves believe their own press. In the case of Jim Jones, did he believe he was who he claimed to be?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's at this point, you know, it's where is that line between deception and being deceived in the heart and in the mind? And where does that cross over into madness, into some kind of mental instability? Usually in groups that get that extreme, I think it goes beyond just he's so self-deceived, he really believes this about himself. But you couple that with mental instability, mental problems, and then that's a recipe for disaster. And then in Jones's case, unlike in David Koresh's case, in Jones's case, you have drug abuse, and so that's another factor that you add in there. So there's sort of this sliding scale with, you know, your average television preacher that's preaching something false from the Bible, all the way down, you know, adding problem after problem on top of problem to the point where you're at a Jim Jones off in some South American country somewhere.
Do many of these leaders and their groups begin in some form or another as something that's kind of at least peripherally Orthodox Christianity?
Yeah, many of them have, and you'll see this. I mean, it's very rare that somebody will just pop up with a complete belief system formed. You know, one, you know, for example, and I'm not drawing a comparison between him and Jim Jones, but Eckhart Tolle. He is an individual who came up and became very popular. His theology, his belief system is fully formed. It's a combination of Buddhism, Christianity, Hinduism, all this New Age stuff. There it is. And it hasn't really evolved a lot. But when you get into more Christian cults, they do start with someone who maybe at one time was very Orthodox, and they started down that slippery slope and just got going worse and worse and worse and worse. I've heard, and seen some transcripts of some of the things Jim Jones said, completely Orthodox early in his day. Other individuals come to mind, Gene Scott, who in his early days was right on the money. I mean, just preaching right on the money. And he went off the deep end into all kinds of bizarre things. So, yeah, it does start out slow, and that's why we as Christians really have to be careful. No, you know, we're not following any man. You don't follow a man. You follow Jesus Christ, and you follow the Word of God. And that's why, for me in my life, and I always counsel others, look, I don't care who it is. If someone is going off base somewhere, you've got to watch that, especially when they start dipping into the essentials of the faith and and they start having messianic complexes, and it's a they can do no wrong type attitude, that's where there's trouble.
Now, this isn't a Christian group, but a Mormon group. When I was watching the whole Warren Jeffs saga unfold last year, and Warren Jeffs was taken in by the authorities after being on the lam for some time, having started this Mormon group out there of polygamists, actually a town, really a whole county that it belonged to him up north and then in Texas as well, I thought to myself, there's a crisis averted. There's perhaps a mass suicide or at least some real violence averted. Did you have the same thought about Warren Jeffs?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, with some of those polygamous groups, we've already had violence, murder, even. Lundgren is a name that springs to mind. Some of these individuals in these polygamous cults, again, what is the common factor? We see isolation. We see these polygamous groups out there in the desert with their own little towns and their own little ways and their own little kings doing what they want to do. It's a recipe for disaster. Again, I just saw a special the other night on MSNBC on The Family, run by Moses David Berg. He did the same thing. He had to leave the United States and go off to a foreign country because his thing was promulgating free love and free sex and adult child sexual contact and sex between little children. And that is a horrific group. And he went off, and the destruction there was not a physical violence, but serious physical sexual abuse that was rampant in his cult. So again, the common denominator is always isolation.
Ann is listening in St. Louis. Ann, thanks for waiting on the line. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I have a question. I have a sister that's in the Society of Ascension. I don't know if you know what that is. They kind of seem to specialize in teaching transcendental meditation. And I was with her today, and she said that she may be hired to teach practical spirituality at a Catholic girls' high school. I just wondered if you'd comment and if you'd ever heard of the Society of Ascension.
Wow, interesting. What do you say, Rich?
Yeah, I haven't heard of this particular society. What it sounds like is it's probably some sort of mind science, New Age meditation group, and you might want to get some information on the mind sciences or even basic New Age teachings from the internet. Do a search on the Society of Ascension, see what you can find out. And I would, if she's going to be teaching, to be honest, if she's going to be teaching at a Catholic school or a Catholic group or something like that, I would find out who maybe the priest is of that church or that diocese and alert them to the fact of, look, here's this person, she's a relative, I love her and everything, but she's going to be possibly teaching for you, and she's into this stuff that certainly is not Roman Catholic. So, and that's, you know, where I'd start to, and maybe they could even help you get some information.
Rich, what are the warning signs? I mean, not just for parents and or others, but what are the warning signs that any person ought to be looking for that may signal a perhaps a detour off into the realm of the cult?
Well, first of all, I always like it when you can ask as many questions as you want. If you're in a group or in a church or at a place where suddenly you can't disagree, you can't ask any questions about what a certain thing means, there seems to be some sort of anointed hierarchy that are just above and beyond reproach, that's a danger sign right there. If there's any talk about you needing to break contact with your family, with your spouse, with your children, simply because they don't believe a certain way about something, but that's another danger sign. And then also, if they're asking you to do something that you don't feel comfortable with as a Christian and that you don't see any justification for in the Bible at all, that's another sign. That's a third sign. If you stay away from those three things, you're probably going to be in an okay church. Not a perfect church, because no church is perfect, but those are the kinds of danger signs you need to look for when it comes to cults or even abusive, aberrant churches.
Finally, with only a minute, Rich, we look back 30 years and we think to ourselves, you know, the 70s, everyone was a little strange in those days, but could it happen again, a Jonestown or something like it?
Well, you know, it did on smaller scales. I mean, it happened in the 90s. It happened a lot in the 90s when we were approaching the new millennium and everybody was, you know, freaking out a little bit. And it's going to happen. You know, if you go all the way back to the first century, Todd, we have seen tragedies like this happen every century. It's not going to stop.
That's about 20 seconds here, Rich.
That's not what we need to look for. What we need to look for is how we as Christians can, in our own little sphere of existence, help people not to get involved, and if they are involved, help them to get out.
Rich Urbanus is a regular guest on the program, a cult expert, author of numerous books, including Defending the Faith and Cults, New Religious Movements, and Your Family. Rich, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. Take care.
I cannot think of anything sadder than the parents who – I had a professor in college whose daughter got mixed up with Jim Jones, ended up in Guyana, and never came back. It's a terribly sad story to tell. A man who had raised his daughter in the Christian faith, and yet, for whatever reason, she was drawn to this man, Jim Jones. Remember, it's not about the man. It's always about the man, Jesus Christ. And if he's not preaching that, the man that you follow isn't preaching Jesus, run away, even if he calls himself a Christian. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.